and the sound was so melodic that I knew I wanted to hear it again. We reached the end of the pier, and I grabbed my board. I tossed the empty beer bottle into the garbage can, hearing it clank to the bottom. Stars were coming out overhead, and the lights from the houses outlined along the dunes reminded me of bright jack-o'-lanterns.
"Do you mind if I ask what led you to join the army? Given that you don't know whether you like it, I mean."
It took me a second to figure out how to answer that, and I shifted my surfboard to my other arm. "I think it's safest to say that, at the time, I needed to." She waited for me to add more, but when I didn't, she simply nodded.
"I'll bet you're glad to be back home for a little while," she said.
"Without a doubt."
"I'll bet your father's glad too, huh?"
"I think so."
"He is. I'm sure he's very proud of you."
I got a better grip on the board, thinking about it. "I hope so."
"You sound like you're not certain."
"You'd have to meet my dad to understand. He's not much of a talker." I could see the moonlight reflected in her dark eyes, and her voice was soft when she spoke.
"He doesn't have to talk to be proud of you. He might be the kind of father who shows it in other ways."
I thought about that, hoping it was true. While I considered it, there was a loud scream from the house, and I caught sight of a couple of co-eds near the fire. One of the guys had his arms wrapped around a girl and was pushing her forward. She was laughing and fighting him off. Brad and Susan were snuggling together nearby, but Randy had vanished.
"You said you don't know most of the people you'll be living with?"
She shook her head, her hair sweeping her shoulders. She swiped at another strand.
"Not too well. We met most of them for the first time at the sign-up, then again today when we got here. I mean, we might have seen each other around campus now and then, and I think a lot of them know each other already, but I don't. Most of them are in fraternities and sororities. I still live in a dorm. They're a nice bunch, though."
As she answered, I got the feeling she was the kind of person who would never say a bad thing about anyone. Her regard for others struck me as refreshing and mature, and yet, strangely, I wasn't surprised. It was part of that indefinable quality I'd sensed about her from the beginning, a manner that set her apart.
"How old are you?"
I asked as we approached the house.
21. I just had a birthday last month. You?
23.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
No, I was an only child. Just me and my folks. My parents still live in Lenore, and they're happy as clams after 25 years. Your turn?
The same, except for me, it's always been just me and my dad.
I knew my answer would lead to a follow-up about the status of my mother, but to my surprise, it didn't come. Instead, she asked,
"Was he the one who taught you to surf?"
"No, I picked that up on my own when I was a kid."
"You're good. I was watching you earlier. You made it look so easy. Graceful, even. Made me wish I knew how."
"I'd be happy to teach you if you want to learn," I volunteered. "It's not that hard. I'll be out tomorrow."
She stopped and fixed her gaze on me.
"Now, don't make offers you're not sure you intend to keep."
She reached for my arm, leaving me speechless, then motioned toward the bonfire.
"You ready to meet some people?"
I swallowed, feeling a sudden dryness in my throat, which was just about the strangest thing that has ever happened to me. The house was one of those big, three-storied monsters, with the garage on the bottom and probably 6 or 7 bedrooms. A massive deck circled the main level. Towels were slung over the railings, and I could hear the sound of multiple conversations coming from all directions. A grill stood on the deck, and I could smell the hot dogs and chicken cooking. The guy leaning over it was shirtless and wearing a do-rag, trying to come across as urban cool. It wasn't working, but it did make me laugh. On the sand out front, the fire was set into a pit, with several girls in oversized sweatshirts seated in chairs circling it, all pretending to be oblivious to the boys around them. Meanwhile, the guys stood just beyond them, looking as if they were trying to pose in a way that accented the size of their arms or sculpted abs, and acting as if they didn't notice the girls at all.
I'd seen all this at Leroy's before. Educated or not, kids were still kids. They were in their early 20s and lust was in the air. Throw in the beach and beer, and I could guess what would happen later. But I would be long gone by then. When Savannah and I drew near, she slowed before pointing.
How about over there by the dune?
She suggested.
Sure.
We took a seat facing the fire. A few of the other girls stared, checking out the new guy, before retreating into their conversations. Randy finally wandered toward the fire with a beer, saw Savannah and me, and quickly turned his back, following the example of the girls.
Chicken or hot dog?
She asked, seemingly oblivious to all of this.
Chicken.
What do you want to drink?
The firelight made her look newly mysterious.
Whatever you're having's fine, thanks.
I'll be right back.
She headed toward the steps, and I forced myself not to follow. Instead, I walked toward the fire, slipped off my shirt, and laid it over an empty chair, then returned to my seat. Glancing up, I saw a do-rag flirting with Savannah, felt a surge of tension, then turned away to get a better grip on things. I knew little about her, and knew even less about what she thought of me. Besides, I had no desire to start something I couldn't finish. I was leaving in a couple of weeks, and none of this would amount to anything. I told myself all those things, and I think I partially convinced myself that I'd head home just as soon as I finished eating, when my thoughts were interrupted by the sight of someone approaching. Tall and lanky, with dark hair that was already receding parted neatly to one side, he reminded me of those guys you met from time to time who looked middle-aged from birth.
"You must be John,"
he said with a smile, squatting in front of me.
"My name's Tim Whedon."
He extended his hand.
"I heard what you did for Savannah. I know she was grateful you were there."
I shook his hand.
"It's nice to meet you."
Despite my initial wariness, his smile was more genuine than either Brad's or Randy's had been. Nor did he mention my tattoos, which was unusual. I suppose I should mention they weren't exactly small and covered most of my arms. People have told me I'll regret it when I'm older, but at the time I got them, I really didn't care. I still don't.
"Do you mind if I take a seat?"
he asked.
"Help yourself."
He made himself comfortable, neither crowding me nor sitting too far away.
"I'm glad you could come. I mean, it's not much, but the food's good. Are you hungry?"
"Actually, I'm starved."
"Surfing'll do that."
"Do you surf?"
"No, but spending time in the ocean always makes me hungry. I remember that from being on vacation as a kid. We used to go to Pine Knoll Shores every summer. You been there?"
"Only once. I had all I needed here."
"Yeah, I suppose you did."
He motioned to my board.
"You like the longboards, huh?"
"I like them both, but the waves here are better suited for the long ones. You need to ride in the Pacific to really enjoy a shortboard."
"Have you been there? Hawaii, Bali, New Zealand, places like that. I've read they're the ultimate."
"Not yet," I said, surprised he'd know about them. "One day, maybe." A log crackled, sending small sparks up to the sky. I brought my hands together, knowing it was my turn.
"I hear you're here to build some homes for the poor." "Did Savannah tell you that?"
"Yeah, that's the plan, anyway. They're for a couple of really deserving families, and hopefully they'll be in their own homes by the end of July."
"That's a good thing you're doing."
"Well, it's not just me.
But hey, I wanted to ask you something."
"Let me guess, you want me to volunteer?"
He laughed.
"No, nothing like that. That's funny, though. I've heard that before. People see me coming, and usually they run the other way. I guess I'm way too easy to read. Anyway, I know it's a long shot, but I was wondering if you knew my cousin. He's stationed at Fort Bragg."
"Sorry," I said. "I'm posted in Germany."
"At Ramstein?"
"No, that's the Air Force base, but I'm relatively close. Why?"
"Well, I was in Frankfurt last December. I spent Christmas there with my family. That's where we're originally from. My grandparents still live there."
"Small world."
"Have you learned any German?"
"Not a bit." "Me neither."
"The sad thing is, my parents are fluent, and I've heard it at home for years, and I even took a class in it before I went.
But I just didn't get it, you know?" I think I was lucky to pass the class, and all I could do was nod at the dinner table and pretend I understood what everyone was saying. The only saving grace was that my brother was in the same boat, so we could feel like morons together.
I laughed. He had an open, honest face, and despite myself, I liked him.
Hey, can I get you anything?
He asked. Savannah's taking care of it.
I should have guessed. Perfect hostess and all that. Always has been.
She said you two grew up together?
He nodded. Her family's ranch is right next to ours. We went to the same schools and attended the same church for years, and now we're at the same university. She's kind of like my little sister. She's special.
Despite the sister comment, I got the impression, by the way he said special, that his feelings ran a little deeper than he was letting on. But unlike Randy, he didn't seem at all jealous about the fact that she'd invited me here. Before I could puzzle over it, Savannah appeared on the stairs and stepped onto the sand.
I see you met Tim,
she said, nodding. In one hand were two plates with chicken, potato salad, and chips. In the other were two cans of Diet Pepsi.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to come over and thank him for what he did,
Tim explained.
Then decided to bore him with my family stories.
Good. I was hoping you two would have a chance to meet.
She held up her hands. Like Tim, she ignored the fact that I was shirtless.
The food's ready. Would you like my plate, Tim? I can go up and get another.
No, I'll get it,
Tim said, standing.
Thanks, though. I'll let you two dig in.
He brushed the sand from his shorts.
Hey, it was nice meeting you, John. If you're in the area again tomorrow, whenever, you're always welcome.
Thanks.
Nice meeting you, too.
A moment later, Tim was heading up the stairs. He didn't look back, merely called out a friendly hello to someone going in the opposite direction, then bounded up the rest of the way. Savannah handed me the plate and some plastic utensils, switched hands and offered me a soda, then took a seat beside me. Close, I noticed, but not quite close enough to touch. She propped her plate on her lap, then reached for her can before hesitating. She held up the can.
You were drinking beer earlier, but you said to get whatever I was getting, so I brought you one of these. I wasn't quite sure what you wanted.
The soda's fine.
You sure? There's plenty of beer in the coolers, and I've heard about you army guys.
I snorted. I'm sure, I said, opening my can. I take it you don't drink.
I don't,
she said. No defensiveness or smugness in her tone, I noted, just the truth. I like that. She ate a bite of her chicken. I did the same, and in silence I wondered about her and Tim and whether she was aware of how he really felt about her. I wondered how she felt about him. There was something there, but I couldn't figure it out. Unless Tim was right and it was a sibling-type thing. I somehow doubted that was the case.
What do you do in the Army?
She asked, finally putting down her fork.
I'm a sergeant in the infantry, weapons squad.
What's it like? I mean, what do you do every day? You shoot guns or blow things up or what?
Sometimes. But actually, it's pretty boring most of the time, at least when we're on base. We assemble in the morning, usually around 6 or so, make sure everyone's there, and then we break into squads to exercise, basketball, running, weightlifting, whatever. Sometimes there's a class that day, anything from assembling and reassembling our weapons, or a night terrain class, or we might head to the rifle range or whatever. If nothing's planned, we just head back to the barracks and play video games or read or work out again or whatever for the rest of the day. Then we reassemble at 4 o'clock and find out what we're doing tomorrow, and then we're done.
Video games?
I work out and read, but my buddies are experts at games, and the more violent the game, the more they like it.
What do you read?
I told her, and she considered it.
And what happens when you're sent to a war zone?
Then,
I said, finishing my chicken. It's different. There's guard duty, and things are always breaking and need to be fixed, so you're busy even when you're not out on patrol. But the infantry are the forces on the ground, so we spend a big chunk of our time away from camp.
Do you ever get scared?
I searched for the right answer. Yeah, sometimes. It's not like you're walking around terrified all the time. Even when things are going to hell all around you, it's just that you're reacting, trying to stay alive. Things are happening so fast that you don't have time to think much of anything except doing your job and trying not to die. It usually affects you afterward, once you're clear. That's when you realize how close you came, and sometimes you get the shakes or puke or whatever.
I'm not sure I could do what you do.
I wasn't sure if she expected a response to that, so I switched topics. Why special education? I asked.
It's kind of a long story. You sure you want to hear it?
When I nodded, she drew a long breath.
There's this boy in Lenore named Alan, and I've known him all my life. He's autistic, and for a long time, no one knew what to do with him or how to get through to him. And it just got to me, you know? I felt so bad for him, even when I was little. When I asked my parents about it, they said that maybe the Lord had special plans for him. It didn't make any sense at first, but Alan had an older brother who was so patient with him all the time. I mean, always. He never got frustrated with him, and little by little, he helped Alan. Alan's not perfect by any stretch. He still lives with his parents, and he'll never be on his own. But he's not as lost as he was when he was younger. And I just decided that I wanted to be able to help kids like Alan.
How old were you when you decided that?
12.
And you want to work with him in a school?
No, she said. I want to do what Alan's brother did. He used horses.
She paused, collecting her thoughts.
With autistic kids, it's like they're locked into their own little worlds. So usually school and therapy are based on routine. But I want to show them experiences that can open new doors for them. I've seen it happen. I mean, Alan was terrified of the horses at first, but his brother kept trying, and after a while, Alan got to the point where he would pat them or rub their noses, then later even feed them. After that, he started to ride. And I remember watching his face the first time he was up there. It was just so incredible, you know? I mean, he was smiling, just as happy as a kid could be. And that's what I want these kids to experience, just happiness, even if it's only for a short while. That's when I knew exactly what I wanted to do with my life. Maybe open a riding camp for autistic kids, where we can really work with them. So maybe they can feel that same happiness that Alan did.
She set down her fork as if embarrassed, then set her plate off to the side. That sounds wonderful.
We'll see if it happens,
she said, sitting up again.
It's just a dream for now.
I take it you like horses, too?
All girls love horses, don't you know that? But yes, I do. I have an Arabian named Midas, and it kills me sometimes that I'm here when I could be off riding him.
The truth comes out.
As it should. But I'm still planning to stay here. I'll ride all day, every day when I get back. Do you ride?
I did once.
Did you like it?
I was sore the next day. It hurt to walk. She giggled, and I realized I liked talking to her. It was easy and natural. Unlike with so many people. Above me, I could see Orion's belt. Just over the horizon on the water, Venus had appeared and glowed a heavy white. Guys and girls continued to tramp up and down the stairs, flirting with booze-induced courage. I sighed. I should probably get going so I can visit with my dad for a while. He's probably wondering where I am, if he's still awake, that is.
Do you want to call him? You can use the phone.
No, I think I'll just head out. It's a long walk.
You don't have a car?
No, I hitched a ride this morning.
Do you want Tim to drive you home? I'm sure he won't mind.
No, that's okay.
Don't be ridiculous. You said it was a long walk, right? I'll have Tim drive you. Let me get him.
She raced off before I could stop her, and a minute later, Tim was following her out of the house.
Tim is happy to take you,
she said, looking way too pleased with herself. I turned toward Tim.
You sure? No problem at all,
he assured me.
My truck's out front. You can just put your board in the back.
He motioned to the board.
Need a hand?
No, I said, rising. I got it. I went to the chair and slipped on my shirt, then picked up my board. Thanks, by the way.
My pleasure,
he said. He patted his pocket.
I'll be back in a second with the keys. It's the green truck parked on the grass. I'll meet you out front.
When he was gone, I turned back to Savannah. It was nice meeting you. She held my gaze.
You too. I never hung out with a soldier before. I felt sort of protected.
I don't think Randy will give me any trouble tonight. Your tattoos probably scared him away.
I guess you had noticed them. Maybe I'll see you around.
You know where I'll be.
I wasn't sure whether that meant she wanted me to come visit again or didn't. In many ways, she remained a complete mystery to me, but then I barely knew her at all.
But I am a little disappointed that you forgot,
she added, almost as an afterthought.
Forgot what?
Didn't you say that you'd teach me how to surf?
If Tim had any inkling of the effect Savannah had on me, or that I'd be visiting again the next day, he gave no indication. Instead, he focused mainly on the drive, making sure he was heading in the right direction. He was the kind of driver who stopped the car even when the light was yellow and he could have sailed through.
I hope you had a good time, he said. I know it's always strange when you don't know anyone.
I did.
You and Savannah really hit it off. She's something, isn't she? I think she liked you.
We had a nice conversation, I said.
I'm glad. I was a little worried about her coming down here. Last year, her parents were with us. So this is the first time she's been on her own like this. I know she's a big girl, but these aren't the kind of people she usually hangs out with, and the last thing I wanted was for her to be fending off guys all night.
I'm sure she could have handled it.
Oh, I'm sure you're right. But I get the feeling that some of these guys are pretty persistent.
Of course they are. They're guys.
He laughed. No, I guess you're right.
He motioned toward the window.
Which way now?
I directed him through a series of turns, then finally I told him to slow the car. He stopped in front of the house, where I could see the light from my dad's den glowing yellow.
Thanks for the ride, I said, opening my door. No problem.
He leaned over the seat.
And listen, like I said, feel free to stop by the house anytime. We work during the week, but weekends and evenings are usually clear.
I'll keep that in mind, I promised. Once inside, I went to my dad's den and opened the door. He was peering at the gray sheet and jumped. I realized he hadn't heard me come in.
Sorry,
I said, taking a seat on the single step that separated the den from the rest of the house.
Didn't mean to scare you.
It's okay, was all he said. He debated whether to set aside the gray sheet, then did.
The waves were great today, I commented. I'd almost forgotten how fantastic the water feels.
He smiled, but again said nothing. I shifted slightly on the step.
How'd work go?
I asked.
The same, he said.
He lapsed back into his own thoughts, and all I could think was that the same thing could be said about our conversations. 3.
Surfing is a solitary sport, one in which long stretches of boredom are interspersed with frantic activity, and it teaches you to flow with nature instead of fight it. It's about getting in the zone, that's what the surfing magazines say anyway, and I mostly agree. There's nothing quite as exciting as catching a wave and living within a wall of water as it rolls toward shore. But I'm not like a lot of those dudes with freeze-dried skin and stringy hair who do it all day every day because they think it's the be-all and end-all of existence. It isn't. For me,
It's more about the fact that the world is crazy noisy almost all the time, and when you're out there, it's not. You're able to hear yourself think. This is what I was telling Savannah, anyway, as we made our way toward the ocean early Sunday morning. At least, that's what I thought I was saying. For the most part, I was just sort of rambling, trying not to be too obvious about the fact that I really liked the way she looked in a bikini.
Like horseback riding, she said.
Huh?
Hearing yourself think. That's why I like riding, too.
I'd shown up a few minutes earlier. The best waves were usually early in the morning, and it was one of those clear blue sky days portending heat that meant the beach would be packed again. Savannah had been sitting on the steps out back, wrapped in a towel, the remains of the bonfire before her. Despite the fact that the party had no doubt gone on for hours after I'd left, there wasn't a single empty can or piece of trash anywhere. My impression of the group improved a bit. Despite the hour, the air was already warm, and we spent a few minutes in the sand near the water's edge, going over the basics of surfing, and I explained how to pop up on the board. When Savannah thought she was ready, I waded in, carrying the board, walking beside her. There were only a few surfers out, the same ones I'd seen the day before. I was trying to figure out the best place to bring Savannah so she'd have enough room when I realized I could no longer see her.
Hold on! Hold on! She shouted from behind me. Stop! Stop!
I turned. Savannah was on her tiptoes as the first splashes of water hit her belly, and her upper body was immediately covered in goose flesh. She appeared to be trying to lift herself from the water.
Let me get used to this.
She gave a few quick, audible gasps and crossed her arms.
Wow, this is really cold. Holy cow!
Holy cow? It wasn't exactly something my buddies would say. You'll get used to it, I said, smirking.
I don't like being cold. I hate being cold.
You live in the mountains where it snows.
Yeah, but we have these things called jackets and gloves and hats that we wear to keep warm. We don't thrust ourselves into Arctic waters first thing in the morning.
Funny, I said. She continued to hop up and down.
Yeah, real funny. I mean, geez.
Geez. I grinned. Her breathing gradually began to even out, but the goose flesh was still there. She took another tiny step forward.
It works best if you just jump right in and go under instead of torturing yourself in stages, I suggested.
You do it your way, I'll do it mine, she said,
unimpressed with my wisdom.
I can't believe you wanted to come out now. I was thinking sometime in the afternoon when the temperature was above freezing.
It's almost 80 degrees.
Yeah, yeah,
she said, finally acclimating. Uncrossing her arms, she took another series of breaths, then dipped maybe an inch. Steeling herself, she slapped a bit of water on her arms.
Okay, I think I'm getting there.
Don't rush for me, really. Take your time.
I will, thank you,
she said, ignoring the teasing tone.
Okay,
she said again, more to herself than me. She took a small step forward, then another. As she moved, her face was a mask of concentration, and I liked the way it looked. So serious, so intense, so ridiculous.
Quit laughing at me,
she said, noting my expression.
I'm not laughing.
I can see it in your face. You're laughing on the inside.
All right, I'll stop.
Eventually, she waded out to join me, and when the water was up to my shoulders, Savannah climbed on the board. I held it in place, trying again not to stare at her figure, which wasn't easy, considering it was right in front of me. I forced myself to monitor the swells behind us.
Now what?
Do you remember what to do? Paddle hard, grab the board on both sides near the front, then pop up to your feet.
Got it.
It's kind of tough at first. Don't be surprised if you fall, but if you do, just roll with it. It usually takes a few times to get it.
Okay,
she said, and I saw a small swell approaching.
Get ready, I said, timing it. Okay, start paddling.
As the wave hit us, I pushed the board, giving it some momentum, and Savannah caught the wave. I don't know what I expected, except that it wasn't to see her pop straight up, keep her balance, and ride the wave all the way back to shore, where it finally petered out. In the shallow water, she jumped off the board as it slowed and turned with dramatic flair toward me.
"How was that?"
she called out. Despite the distance between us, I couldn't look away. Oh, man, I suddenly thought. I'm in real trouble.
I did gymnastics for years, she admitted. I've always had a good sense of balance. I suppose I should have said something about that while you were telling me I was going to wipe out.
We spent more than an hour in the water. She popped up every time and rode the waves to shore with ease. Though she couldn't steer the board, I had no doubt that if she wanted to, she would be able to master that in no time. Afterward, we returned to the house. I waited out back while she went upstairs. While a few people had arisen, three girls were on the deck staring at the ocean. Most were still recovering from the night before and nowhere to be seen. Savannah emerged a couple of minutes later in shorts and a t-shirt, holding two cups of coffee. She sat beside me on the steps as we faced the water.
I didn't say you'd wipe out, I clarified. I just said that if you did, you should roll with it.
Uh-huh,
she said, her expression mischievous. She pointed to my cup.
Is your coffee okay?
Tastes great, I said.
I have to start my day with coffee. It's my one vice.
Everyone's got to have one.
She glanced at me.
What's yours?
I don't have any, I answered,
and she surprised me by giving me a playful nudge.
Did you know that last night was the first night of the full moon?
I did, but thought it best not to admit it.
Really? I said.
I've always loved full moons, ever since I was a kid. I like to think that they were an omen of sorts. I wanted to believe they always portended good things, like if I was making a mistake, I would have the chance to start over.
She said nothing else about it. Instead, she brought the cup to her lips, and I watched as the steam wreathed her face.
What's on your agenda today? I asked.
We're supposed to have a meeting sometime today, but other than that, nothing. Well, except for church. For me, I mean. And, well, whoever else wants to go. Which reminds me, what time is it?
I checked my watch. A little after 9.
Already? I guess that doesn't give me much time. Service is at 10.
I nodded, knowing our time together was almost up.
Do you want to go with me?
I heard her ask.
To church?
Yeah, to church, she said. Don't you go?
I wasn't sure what to say. It was obviously important to her, and though I got the impression that my answer would disappoint, I didn't want to lie.
Not really, I admitted.
I haven't been to church in years. I mean, I used to go as a kid, but I trailed off. I don't know why, I finished. She stretched her legs out, waiting to see if I would add more. When I didn't, she arched an eyebrow.
So?
What?
Do you want to go with me or not?
I don't have any clothes. I mean, this is all I have. And I doubt if I have enough time to go home, shower, and get back in time. Otherwise, I would.
She gave me the once-over.
Good.
She patted my knee the second time she'd touched me.
I'll get you some clothes.
You look great,
Tim assured me.
The collar's a little snug, but I don't think anybody will be able to tell.
In the mirror, I saw a stranger dressed in khakis and a pressed shirt and tie. I couldn't remember the last time I'd worn a tie. I wasn't sure I was happy about any of this or not. Tim, meanwhile, was way too chipper about the whole thing.
How'd she talk you into this?
He asked. I have no idea. He laughed and, leaning over to tie his shoes, winked.
I told you she liked you.
We've got chaplains in the army, and most of them are pretty good guys. On base, I got to know a couple of them fairly well, and one of them, Ted Jenkins, was the kind of guy you trusted on the spot. He didn't drink, and I'm not saying he was one of us, but he was always welcome when he showed up. He had a wife and a couple of rugrats, and he'd been in the service for 15 years. He had personal experience when it came to struggles with family and military life in general. And if you ever sat down to talk with him, he really listened. You couldn't tell him everything. He was an officer, after all. And he ended up coming down fairly hard on a couple of guys in my platoon who admitted their escapades a bit too freely. But the thing was, he had this kind of presence that made you want to tell him anyway. I don't know what it was other than the fact that he was a good man and a hell of an army chaplain. He talked about God just as naturally as you might talk about your friend, not in that preachy, irritating way that generally turns me off. Nor did he press you to attend services on Sundays. He sort of left it up to you. And depending on what was going on or how dangerous things got, he might find himself talking to either one or two people, or 100. Before my platoon was sent to the Balkans, he probably baptized 50 people. I'd been baptized as a kid, so I didn't go that route. But like I said, it had been a long time since I'd been to service. I'd stopped going with my dad a long time ago, and I didn't know what to expect. Nor can I honestly say I was looking forward to it. But in the end, the service wasn't that bad. The pastor was low-key, the music was all right, and the time didn't drag by the way it always seemed to when I was little. I'm not saying I got much out of it, but even so, I was glad I went, if only so I could talk about something new with my dad. And also, because it gave me just a bit more time with Savannah. Savannah ended up sitting between Tim and me, and I watched her from the corner of my eye as she sang. She had a quiet, low-key singing voice, but was always in tune, and I liked the way it sounded. Tim stayed focused on the scriptures, and on the way out, he stopped to visit with the pastor while Savannah and I waited in the shade of a dogwood tree out front. Tim looked animated as he chatted with the pastor. "Old friends?" I asked, nodding toward Tim. Despite the shade, I was getting hot and could feel trails of perspiration beginning to form.
"No, I think his dad was the one who told him about this pastor. He had to use MapQuest last night to find this place."
She fanned herself. In her sundress, she reminded me of a proper Southern belle.
"I'm glad you came."
"So am I," I agreed.
"Are you hungry?"
"Getting there."
"We have some food back at the house if you want some, and you can give Tim his clothes back. I can tell you're hot and uncomfortable."
"It's not half as hot as helmets, boots, and body armor, trust me."
She tilted her head up at me. "I like hearing you talk about body armor. Not a lot of guys in my classes talk like you. I find it interesting."
"You teasing me?"
"Just noting for the record." She leaned gracefully against the tree. "I think Tim's finishing up."
I followed her gaze, noticing nothing different. "How can you tell?"
"See how he brought his hands together? That means he's getting ready to say goodbye. In just a second, he's going to put his hand out, he'll smile and nod, and then he'll be on his way."
I watched Tim do exactly as she predicted and amble toward us. I noted her amused expression.
She shrugged. "When you live in a small town like mine, there's not much to do other than watch people. You begin to see patterns after a while."
There'd probably been too much Tim watching, in my humble opinion. But I wasn't about to admit it.
"Hey there,"
Tim raised a hand.
"You two ready to head back?"
"We've been waiting for you," she pointed out.
"Sorry,"
he said.
"Just got to talking."
"You just get to talking with anyone and everyone."
"I know," he said. "I'm working on being more standoffish."
She laughed, and while their familiar banter put me momentarily outside their circle of intimacy, all was forgotten when Savannah looped her arm through mine on our way back to the car. Everyone was up by the time we got back, and most were already in their bathing suits and working on their tans. Some were lounging on the upper deck, most were clustered together on the beach out back. Music blasted from a stereo inside the house, coolers of beer stood refilled and ready, and more than a few were drinking. The age-old cure for the hangover headache. I passed no judgment. A beer sounded good, actually. But given that I'd just been to church, I figured I should pass. I changed my clothes, folding Tim's the way I'd learned in the army, then returned to the kitchen. Tim had made a plate of sandwiches.
"Help yourself,"
he said, gesturing.
"We have tons of food. I should know I'm the one who spent 3 hours shopping yesterday."
He rinsed his hands and dried them on a towel.
"All right, now it's my turn to change. Savannah'll be out in a minute."
He left the kitchen. Alone, I looked around. The house was decorated in that traditional, beachy way. Lots of bright-colored wicker furniture, lamps made with seashells, small statues of lighthouses above the mantel, pastel paintings of the coast. Lucy's parents had owned a place like this, not here, but on Bald Head Island. They never rented it out, preferring to spend their summers there. Of course, the old man still had to work in Winston-Salem, and he and the wife would head back for a couple of days a week, leaving poor Lucy all alone. Except for me, of course. Had they known what was happening on those days, they probably wouldn't have left us alone.
"Hey there," Savannah said.
She donned her bikini again, though she was wearing shorts over the bottoms.
"I see you're back to normal."
"How can you tell?"
"Your eyes aren't bulging out because your collar's too tight?"
I smiled. "Tim made some sandwiches."
"Great, I'm starved," she said, moving around the kitchen. "Did you grab one?"
"Not yet," I said.
"Well, dig in, I hate to eat alone."
We stood in the kitchen as we ate. The girls lying on the deck hadn't realized we were there, and I could hear one of them talking about what she did with one of the guys last night. And none of it sounded as though she were in town on a goodwill mission for the poor. Savannah wrinkled her nose as if to say, "Way too much information," then turned to the fridge.
"I need a drink. Do you want something?"
"Water's fine." She bent over to grab a couple of bottles. I tried not to stare, but did so anyway, and frankly, enjoyed it. I wondered whether she knew I was staring, and assumed she did, for when she stood up and turned around, she had that amused look again. She set the bottles on the counter.
"After this, you want to go surfing again?"
How could I resist? We spent the afternoon in the water. As much as I enjoyed the up-close Savannah lying-on-the-board view I was treated to, I enjoyed the sight of her surfing even more. To make things even better, she asked to watch me while she warmed up on the beach, and I was treated to my own private viewing while enjoying the waves. By mid-afternoon, we were lying on towels near, but not too near, the rest of the group behind the house. A few curious glances drifted in our direction, but for the most part, no one seemed to care that I was there, except for Randy and Susan. Susan frowned pointedly at Savannah. Randy, meanwhile, was content to hang out with Brad and Susan as the third wheel, licking his wounds. Tim was nowhere to be seen. Savannah was lying on her stomach, a tempting sight. I was on my back beside her, trying to doze in the lazy heat, but too distracted by her presence to fully relax.
"Hey," she murmured, "tell me about your tattoos."
I rolled my head in the sand.
"What about them?"
"I don't know. Why you got them? What they mean?"
I propped myself on one elbow. I pointed to my left arm, which had an eagle and banner.
"Okay, this is the infantry insignia, and this,"
I pointed to the words and letters,
"is how we're identified. Company, battalion, regiment. Everyone in my squad has one. We got it just after basic training at Fort Benning in Georgia when we were celebrating."
"Why does it say Jumpstart underneath it?"
"That's my nickname. I got it during basic training, courtesy of our beloved drill sergeant. I wasn't putting my gun together fast enough, and he basically said that he was going to jumpstart a certain body part if I didn't get my act in gear." The nickname stuck.
"He sounds pleasant,"
she joked.
"Oh, yeah, we called him Lucifer behind his back."
She smiled.
"What's the barbed wire above it for?"
"Nothing," I said, shaking my head. "I had that one done before I joined."
"And the other arm?"
Chinese character. I didn't want to go into it, so I shook my head.
It's from back in my I'm lost and don't give a damn stage. It doesn't mean anything.
Isn't it a Chinese character?
Yes.
Then what does it mean? It's got to mean something like bravery or honor or something.
It's, profanity.
Oh,
she said with a blink. Like I said, it doesn't mean anything to me now.
Except that maybe you shouldn't flash it if you ever go to China.
I laughed. Yeah, except that, I agreed.
She was quiet for a moment. You were a rebel, huh?
I nodded. A long time ago. Well, not really that long ago, but it seems like it.
That's what you meant when you said the army was something you needed at the time?
It's been good for me.
She thought about it. Tell me, would you have jumped from my bag back then?
No, I probably would have laughed at what happened.
She evaluated my answer, as if wondering whether to believe me. Finally, she drew a long breath.
I'm glad you joined then. I really needed that bag.
Good.
What else?
What else what?
What else can you tell me about yourself?
I don't know. What do you want to know?
Tell me something no one else knows about you.
I considered the question. I can tell you how many $10 Indians with a rolled edge were minted in 1907.
How many?
42. They were never intended for the public. Some men at the mint made them for themselves and some friends.
You like coins?
I'm not sure. It's a long story.
We've got time.
I hesitated while Savannah reached for her bag.
Hold on,
she said, rummaging through it. She pulled out a tube of copper tone.
You can tell me after you put some lotion on my back. I feel like I'm getting burned.
Oh, I can, huh?
She winked.
It's part of the deal.
I applied the lotion to her back and shoulders and probably went a bit overboard, but I convinced myself that she was turning pink and that having a sunburn of any sort would make her work the next day miserable. After that, I spent the next few minutes telling her about my grandfather and dad, about the coin shows and good old Eliasburg. What I didn't do was specifically answer her question, for the simple reason that I wasn't quite sure what the answer was. When I finished, she turned to me.
And your father still collects coins?
All the time. At least I think so. We don't talk about coins anymore.
Why not?
I told her that story, too. Don't ask me why. I knew I should have been putting my best foot forward and tossing out crap to impress her. But with Savannah, that wasn't possible. For whatever reason, she made me want to tell the truth, even though I barely knew her. When I finished, she was wearing a curious expression.
Yeah, I was a jerk, I offered, knowing there were other, probably more accurate words to describe me back then, all of which were profane enough to offend her.
It sounds like it, she said, but that's not what I was thinking. I was trying to imagine you back then, because you seem nothing like that person now.
What could I say that wouldn't sound bogus, even if it was true? Unsure, I opted for Dad's approach and said nothing.
What's your dad like?
I gave her a quick recap. As I spoke, she scooped sand and let it trail through her fingers, as if concentrating on my choice of words. In the end, surprising myself again, I admitted that we were almost strangers.
You are,
she said, using that non-judgmental, matter-of-fact tone.
You've been gone for a couple of years, and even you admit that you've changed. How could he know you?
I sat up. The beach was packed. It was the time of day when everyone who planned to come was already here, and no one was quite ready to leave. Randy and Brad were playing frisbee by the water's edge, running and shouting. A few others wandered over to join them.
I know, I said, but it's not just that. We've always been strangers. I mean, it's just so hard to talk to him.
As soon as I said it, I realized she was the first person I'd ever admitted it to. Strange, but then most of what I was saying to her sounded strange.
Most people our age say that about their parents.
Maybe, I thought, but this was different. It wasn't a generational difference. It was the fact that for my dad, normal chit-chat was all but impossible, unless it dealt with coins. I said nothing more, however, and Savannah smoothed the sand in front of her. When she spoke, her voice was soft.
I'd like to meet him.
I turned toward her. Yeah?
He sounds interesting. I've always loved people who have this passion for life.
It's a passion for coins, not life, I corrected her.
It's the same thing. Passion is passion. It's the excitement between the tedious spaces, and it doesn't matter where it's directed.
She shuffled her feet in the sand.
Well, most of the time, anyway. I'm not talking vices here.
Like you and caffeine?
She smiled, flashing the small gap between her two front teeth.
Exactly. It can be coins, or sports, or politics, or horses, or music, or faith. The saddest people I've ever met in life are the ones who don't care deeply about anything at all. Passion and satisfaction go hand in hand, and without them, any happiness is only temporary because there's nothing to make it last. I'd love to hear your dad talk about coins, because that's when you see a person at his best. And I've found that someone else's happiness is usually infectious.
I was struck by her words. Despite Tim's opinion that she was naive, she seemed far more mature than most people our age. Then again, considering the way she looked in her bikini, she probably could have recited the phone book and I would have been impressed. Savannah sat up, and her gaze followed mine. The game of frisbee was in full swing. As Brad zipped the disc, a couple of others went running for it. They both dove for it simultaneously, splashing in the shallows as their heads collided. The one in red shorts came up empty, swearing and holding his head, his shorts covered in sand. The others laughed, and I found myself smiling and wincing simultaneously.
"Did you see that?" I asked.
"Hold on," she said. "I'll be right back."
She trotted over to Red Shorts. He saw her approaching and froze, as did the guy next to him. Savannah, I realized, had pretty much the same effect on every guy, not just me. I could see her talking and smiling, turning that earnest gaze on the guy who nodded as she spoke, looking like a chastised adolescent. She returned to my side and sat again. I didn't ask, knowing it wasn't my business, but I knew I was telegraphing my curiosity.
Normally I wouldn't have said anything, but I asked him to keep his language in check because of all the families out here, she explained. There are a lot of little kids running around. He said he would.
I should have guessed. Did you suggest he use holy cow or geez instead?
She squinted at me mischievously.
You liked those expressions, didn't you?
I'm thinking of passing them on to my squad. They'll add to our intimidation factor when we're busting down doors and launching RPGs.
She giggled.
Definitely scarier than swearing, even if I don't know what an RPG is.
Rocket-propelled grenade.
Despite myself, I liked her more with every passing minute.
What are you doing tonight?
I don't have any plans. Well, except for the meeting. Why, did you want to bring me to meet your father?
No, well, not tonight anyway, later.
Tonight, I wanted to show you around Wilmington.
Are you asking me out?
Yeah, I admitted. I'll have you back whenever you want. I know you've got to work tomorrow, but there's this great place that I want to show you.
What kind of place?
A local place, specializes in seafood, but it's more of an experience.
She wrapped her arms around her knees.
I usually don't date strangers, she said finally. And we only met yesterday. You think I can trust you?
I wouldn't, I said.
She laughed.
Well, in that case, I suppose I can make an exception.
Yeah?
Yeah, she said. I'm a sucker for honest guys with crew cuts. What time?
4. I was home by 5, and though I didn't feel sunburned, that southern European skin again, the burn was obvious when I showered. The water stung as it ricocheted off my chest and shoulders, and my face felt as if I were running a low fever. Afterward, I shaved for the first time since I'd been home, and dressed in a clean pair of shorts and one of the few relatively nice button-down shirts I owned, light blue. Lucy had bought it for me and swore the color was perfect for me. I rolled up the sleeves and left the shirt untucked, then rummaged through my closet for an ancient pair of sandals. Through the crack in the door, I could see my dad at his desk, and it struck me that for the second night in a row, I'd made other plans for dinner. Nor had I spent any time with him this weekend. He wouldn't complain, I knew, but I still felt a pang of guilt. After we stopped talking about coins, breakfast and dinner were the only things we shared, and I was now depriving him even of that. Maybe I hadn't changed as much as I thought I had. I was staying in his home and eating his food, and I was just about to ask him whether I could borrow his car. In other words, pretty much leading my own life and using him in the process. I wondered what Savannah would say to that, but I think I already knew the answer. Savannah sometimes sounded a lot like the little voice that had taken up residence in my head, but never bothered paying rent. And right now it whispered that if I felt guilty, maybe I was doing something wrong. I resolved that I would spend more time with him. It was a cop-out, and I admitted it, but I didn't know what else to do. When I opened the door, Dad looked startled to see me. "Hey, Dad," I said, taking my usual seat.
"Hi, John."
As soon as he spoke, he glanced at his desk and ran a hand over his thinning hair. When I added nothing, he realized that he should ask me a question.
"How was your day?"
he finally inquired. I shifted in my seat. "It was great, actually. I spent most of the day with Savannah, the girl I told you about last night."
"Oh," his eyes drifted to the side, refusing to meet mine. "You didn't tell me about her."
"I didn't?"
"No, but that's okay. It was late."
For the first time, he seemed to realize I was dressed up, or at least as dressed up as he'd ever seen me, but he couldn't bring himself to ask about it. I tugged at my shirt, letting him off the hook. "Yeah, I know, trying to impress her, right? I'm taking her out to dinner tonight," I said. "Is it okay if I borrow the car?"
"Oh, okay," he said.
"I mean, did you need it tonight? I might be able to call a friend or something."
"No,"
he said. He reached into his pocket for the keys. 9 dads out of 10 would have tossed them. Mine held them out.
"You okay?"
I asked.
"Just tired," he said.
I stood and took the keys.
"Dad?"
He glanced up again.
"I'm sorry about not having dinner with you these last couple of nights."
"It's okay," he said. "I understand." The sun was beginning its descent, and as I pulled out, the sky was a swirl of fruity colors that contrasted dramatically with the evening skies I'd come to know in Germany. Traffic was horrendous, as it usually was on Sunday nights, and it took almost 30 exhaust-fumed minutes to get back to the beach and pull in the drive. I pushed open the door to the house without knocking. 2 guys seated on the couch watching baseball heard me come in.
"Hey,"
they said, sounding uninterested and unsurprised. "Have you seen Savannah?"
"Who?"
one of them asked, obviously paying me little attention.
"Never mind, I'll find her."
I crossed the living room to the back deck, saw the same guy as the night before grilling again and a few others, but no sign of Savannah. Nor could I see her on the beach. I was just about to go back in when I felt someone tapping on my shoulder.
"Who you looking for?"
she asked.
I turned around. "Some girl," I said. "She tends to lose things at piers, but she's a quick learner when it comes to surfing."
She put her hands on her hips, and I smiled. She was dressed in shorts and a summer halter with a hint of color in her cheeks, and I noticed she'd applied a bit of mascara and lipstick. While I loved her natural beauty, I am a kid from the beach. She was even more striking than I remembered. I caught the whiff of some lemony fragrance as she leaned toward me.
"That's all I am,"
Some girl? She asked.
She sounded both playful and serious, and for an instant I fantasized about wrapping my arms around her right then and there.
Oh, I said, feigning surprise. It's you.
The two guys on the couch glanced toward us, then returned to the screen.
You ready to go?
I asked.
I've just got to get my purse, she said.
She retrieved it from the kitchen counter, and we started for the door.
And where are we going, by the way?
When I told her, she lifted an eyebrow.
You're taking me to eat at a place with the word shack in the name.
I'm just an underpaid grunt in the army. It's all I can afford.
She bumped against me as we walked.
See, this is why I usually don't date strangers.
The Shrimp Shack is in downtown Wilmington, in the historic area that borders the Cape Fear River. At one end of the historic area are your typical tourist destinations, souvenir stores, a couple of places specializing in antiques, a few upscale restaurants, coffee shops, and various real estate offices. At the other end, however, Wilmington displayed its character as a working port city, large warehouses, more than one of which stood abandoned, and a few other dated office buildings only half occupied. I doubted that the tourists who flocked here in the summer ever ventured toward this other end. This was the direction I turned. Little by little, the crowds faded away until no one was left on the sidewalk as the area grew more dilapidated.
Where is this place? Savannah asked.
Just a little farther, I said. Up there at the end.
It's kind of out of the way, isn't it?
It's kind of a local institution, I said. The owner doesn't care if tourists come or not. He never has. A minute later, I slowed the car and turned into a small parking lot bordering one of the warehouses. A few dozen cars were parked in front of the Shrimp Shack, as they always were, and the place hadn't changed. As long as I'd known it, it had looked run down, with a broad, cluttered porch, peeling paint, and a crooked roofline that made it appear as if the place were about to fall over, despite the fact that it had been weathering hurricanes since the 1940s. The exterior was decorated with nets, hubcaps, license plates, and old